Okay. Another rumor on the internet, Marilyn Manson has "Eat Me" tattooed at the end of his penis. I don't know where we found these.
Eat me on the end of my penis?
Yes.
No, I don't have anything tattooed on my dick, but I was telling my new bass player who said...
Well, you must have got a bad rap from that.
Yeah, it kind of put my whole career on hold. But a lot of people don't know about it because I had to really take an active stance legally against a lot of.
Here's another one for you. I think this one may be true, but can you confirm or deny? Marilyn Manson buys Mexican kids across the border so he can throw them into the audience during shows.
Gave me a new idea for a
show. I truly believe that this is not of God, it's of Satan.
Since kicking off his Dead to the World tour in October of 96, Manson has met opposition.
You are listening to the Marilyn Manson Cases Podcast, the podcast discussing the accusations, lawsuits, and legal news surrounding shock rocker Marilyn Manson. Please note topics include allegations of abuse, some may find disturbing.
Welcome to the Marilyn Manson Cases Podcast. I'm Lisa, also known as the Manson Cases on social media. If you haven't been following me on Instagram or X, you might have missed the recent big news I posted in reference to the Jane Doe lawsuit settling. For context, I already had this episode in the works and nearly completed when the notice of settlement was filed, which means I had to basically start over from scratch. So this episode is posting a little later than I originally intended. Even so, in this episode, I will still be discussing items related to the now axed trial, as the details are still important to talk about. This includes the witnesses who would have testified, the exhibits list detailing evidence for trial, and my personal thoughts and/or speculations on them. Plus, I want to talk about the exclusive quotes in the media after the lawsuit settled. This includes what Jane Doe had to say exclusively to Rolling Stone, and what both sides' attorneys had to say to the media. Going back to the previous episode, I left you all with a bit of a cliffhanger, hinting we now know the identity of Jane Doe. According to the exhibits list, Jane Doe is none other than a relatively unknown singer known as Chloe Black. She came forward with allegations against Marilyn Manson on February 1st, 2021. The same day Evan Rachel Wood, Esme Bianco, and other accusers come forward on social media. Her stage name is confirmed by reviewing the jointly filed public exhibits list for trial. Within the exhibits list, three items specifically mention her stage name, confirming Chloe Black as the plaintiff. One description of an exhibit links to an interview describing it as a, quote, July 12, 2018, Vice interview with plaintiff. The link in the exhibit list leads to an interview with singer Chloe Black. Another exhibit details, quote, plaintiff's spaceman video file, which is the same link to the interview, but is for the video in the article. It is a Chloe Black song called Spaceman. And last, her name is listed under her own exhibit as, quote, Instagram post by Chloe Black Music. These confirmations are linked to an article, a video, and even an old Twitter post with a specific date regarding her past comments during the Me Too movement. In summary, these developments provide a fascinating layer to my understanding of this case. The confirmation of her identity sheds new light on how her public allegations compare to allegations made later on in her lawsuit, specifically her claims of repressed memories. Moving forward, I want to first discuss the exhibits list, as I've already mentioned some details related to it. This list includes both parties' evidence that would have been presented at the trial. Brian Warner, professionally known as Marilyn Manson, had prepared 83 exhibits as part of his defense against the allegations. In contrast, Chloe Black, the plaintiff, had 19 exhibits to substantiate her claims in the lawsuit. In total, the exhibits list comprises 118 items. The fact that the total count is 118 suggests that not all pieces of evidence were publicly listed in this document. Both parties' exhibits are assigned numbers. Manson's range from 1 to 83, and Chloe Black's are numbered from 100 to 118. This indicates that exhibits 84 through 99 are missing, and are not publicly described in this document. This could suggest that Manson had additional exhibits for the trial that were either placed under seal and not listed publicly, or that they were exhibits not being used for trial at all. Regardless, this aspect is intriguing because it could mean he had more exhibits than what is known. Now, I want to focus on the exhibits provided by Manson. As a reminder, he submitted an extensive list of 83 exhibits in his defense, and these exhibits are not publicly available, just a basic description of what they entailed. While I won't cover each one individually, I'll highlight the five most significant details from Manson's exhibit list. First, the Instagram messages exchanged between Chloe Black and other accusers, both before, during, and after the social media allegations. To provide context, it's important to note that Manson's defense appeared likely to center on allegations he previously mentioned in this and other lawsuits. In prior legal filings, Manson's attorney, Howard King, hinted at these allegations being part of an orchestrated hoax. This mirrors Manson's counter-allegations in his lawsuit filed against Evan Rachel Wood and Ashley Ilma Gore. Manson claims that Evan and Ilma recruited women to accuse him publicly of rape and abuse, particularly starting around the time of the Phoenix Act bill's creation, and during the creation of the two-part HBO documentary about this bill and the allegations, called Phoenix Rising. You can see how these lawsuits are interconnected when reading all of the legal filings, which is something the mainstream media has not been actively doing. Starting with an exhibit dated September 15, 2020, the description details an Instagram message between her and Evan Rachel Wood. The description details Chloe was asked about this exhibit at her September 7, 2023 deposition. So why is this important? To start, this conversation takes place less than 5 months before Chloe, Evan, and other women came forward to make allegations on February 1, 2021. And in her lawsuit, Chloe says the following. Plaintiff did not coordinate with any of the other survivors prior to the news release on February 1, 2021. She did not know any of them personally, with the exception of Ashley Walters and Sarah McNeely. This naturally leads to questions. Why did Evan and Chloe communicate before the allegations if they weren't acquainted? And what was discussed during this interaction? Notably, this coincides with the filming of the second episode of Phoenix Rising, beginning around September 13, 2020. Additionally, this also aligns with details in Ilma Gore's deposition within Manson's lawsuit, outlining a procedure for contacting alleged victims. This detail is an image of a text message dated September 22, 2020, found on a broken iPad formerly owned by Ilma. It outlines a process to, quote, reach out to victims. The procedure involved using various communication channels, including reaching out to victims on social media and engaging with Evan and the, quote, team in discussions regarding the documentary. These circumstances give rise to important questions. Why wasn't the conversation between Evan and Chloe disclosed in her lawsuit? Does it conflict with her claim of non-coordination in her allegations? Her lawsuit notes the repression of memories of two assaults and their recovery upon reading an article about Manson's other victims in February 2021. These omissions might suggest she has something to hide, or at the very least, raise doubts about the timeline of her alleged events. Also, what specific details does this conversation contain? Unfortunately, due to the lawsuit being settled, we may never know for certain, at least not until Manson's lawsuit goes to trial. In that case, he could likely request communications between Evan and her communications between other accusers. I've seen this request in Esme Bianco's lawsuit before it settled, where Ashley Walters and Ashley Morgan Smithline were deposed via an order. In Ashley Walters' case, she was forced to sit for her deposition through a series of events that previously involved her changing the date several times. Let's shift focus to other exhibits. A series of Instagram messages that commenced on February 1st, 2021, the same day the allegations were made on social media, including her own post. One exhibit details conversations specifically between Chloe and another known accuser, Sarah McNeely, spanning from February 1st to February 5th. In her lawsuit, Chloe stated that she had only met Sarah McNeely twice during her relationship with Mr. Warner and did not reconnect with her until after the news was released. While this explanation seems reasonable, it gets more intriguing. The following day, another exhibit reveals Chloe had Instagram conversations with Ashley Walters on February 2nd, who she claims to have known only during her relationship with Manson. Subsequent exhibits show her conversations transitioning to text messages, at least with Ashley Walters, on February 3rd and February 4th, with later exchanges occurring on May 28th and May 29th, coinciding with the filing of Chloe's lawsuit and its media coverage. But conversations with other accusers go beyond Evan Rachel Wood, Ashley Walters, and Sarah McNeely. They include Instagram exchanges with Esme Bianco on February 14, 2021, and again on June 8, 2021, and a former Manson band member, Fred Sablin, on February 5, 2021, who is not an accuser per se, but is seen in the Phoenix Rising documentary. Additionally, there's another message with Evan on February 3, 2021. In summary, these exhibits unveil a variety of conversations on Instagram and some via text messages between Chloe and other accusers, both during and after the social media allegations. What exactly did Chloe talk about with other accusers? Now, let me get into the second most significant aspect learned from Manson's exhibit list, Chloe Black's comprehensive records. These include her surgery notes, gynecological records, and therapy session notes that span several years prior to the allegations. These records also cover the period before Chloe Black's initial encounter with Manson in February 2011, which later extended beyond her lawsuit. Which is interesting that Manson is using her own records against her. Starting with gynecological records, let's take a look and see what her lawsuit says about this. In her lawsuit, she says, quote, "In the months and years after the vaginal rape, plaintiff began experiencing vaginal pain and inquired about this with her doctor, who initially could not diagnose the problem. Plaintiff went on to experience vaginal pain that made intercourse difficult or near impossible for multiple years. Over the course of this time, she saw multiple gynecologists in the UK who suggested the problem was psychological and repeatedly asked if she had been sexually assaulted. Plaintiff could not understand why her doctors would think this and became very angry at the repeated suggestion. Even upon being asked directly, her memories were so unavailable that she had no ability to recognize the truth. She was also referred to a specialist more recently in 2019, who again asked similar questions, but plaintiff again was unable to access her memories to answer the questions truthfully. According to Manson's exhibit list, some of these gynecological records span from 2017 to 2020. However, it remains unclear whether some earlier records, dating as far back as 2013, are related to the same supposed issue. Many of these other medical records pertain to surgeries conducted over the years, but it is not clear how that relates to any of this. Surprisingly, when reviewing Chloe Black's exhibit list for her medical records, which one might expect her to point to, are noticeably not mentioned. While it's possible that Manson has already introduced this information, which is why she does not, I would expect to still see her reference her own medical records. For example, in Manson's exhibits detailing Chloe's conversations between accusers, there are separate exhibits for the same date, suggesting that his defense is emphasizing particular aspects of conversations already presented as a separate exhibit. While I cannot be entirely certain why she doesn't do the same, it is weird she references none of her own gynecological or other medical records in her exhibits list. Nonetheless, the question remains, why wouldn't Chloe Black present her own medical evidence while Manson is doing so in his own defense? The only reasonable conclusion I could surmise from this is that these medical records actually do not detail what she alleged in her lawsuit. In Manson's defense, he includes Chloe Black's therapy session notes and other mental health-related records. Surprisingly, while Manson presents these records, Chloe does not include any of her therapy sessions or mental health records in her own exhibits. A record of particular interest is described as January 1, 2008 to August 28, 2023, plaintiff's medical file with chart and summary of encounters for individual counseling. In plain terms, encounters refer to records detailing a person's visits to see doctors or specialists, and it lists their diagnosed medical conditions. This record in particular related to Chloe's counseling sessions spanning 15 years. What's intriguing is that the request for counseling records starts 3 years prior to Chloe meeting Manson for the first time, and this request likely occurred fairly recently, around a month before the trial, considering the record spanned up to August 28, 2023. In Manson's exhibits, there is that record, and then separate therapy sessions and notes. These appear to start as early as October 9th, 2021, and ending on August 15th, 2022. This leads me to question whether the inclusion of numerous separate therapy sessions and the separate summary of encounters for counseling sessions spanning 15 years is due to the possibility that these records or past diagnoses were initially omitted, whether intentionally or inadvertently. Manson also has in his exhibit list a record dated August 6, 2021, by a Wendy Blanco who appears to have provided a psychosocial assessment regarding Chloe. For proper context, the reviewer must have knowledge of previous mental health diagnoses to conduct a precise evaluation. So it makes me wonder if this counseling session record spanning 15 years also relates to this assessment from 2021. Notably, the separate therapy sessions also begin less than a month after Chloe's communication with Evan Rachel Wood. Chloe's assessment is 6 months after she came forward on social media with her allegations, and less than 3 months after filing her lawsuit. However, the reason for these requests for 15 years worth of counseling records dating so far back as 2008 remains unclear. It's worth noting that the mystery surrounding these therapy sessions and notes may also relate to an expert witness on Chloe's witness list. This expert witness specializes in child psychology, which is peculiar considering Chloe was an adult when she claimed to have had a relationship with Manson. Unless Manson's defense was going to address mental health issues related from her childhood or other factors yet to be considered, unfortunately, we will never really know for sure. But it is telling to me that she does not have any of her therapy notes and sessions on her own exhibits list as evidence to prove her allegations. Now again, it could be due to the fact that Manson presents this already, but it still does not explain why she would have zero of her own therapy notes and counseling sessions detailed on her own exhibit list. And when an opposing party has these types of details in their exhibit list as evidence, it's usually to point out discrepancies or other details within these records, even if not to point out specific details she provided to prove her own case. Now, moving on to the third intriguing aspect I discovered when reviewing Manson's exhibit list, it pertains to a deposition conducted on September 5th, 2023. This deposition involves a woman named Ruth Bracegirdle, who is listed on Chloe Black's witness list. I found this to be interesting because while she is listed as Chloe's witness, her deposition is being used in Manson's defense, but not listed for Chloe's. Unfortunately, the documents do not provide specific information about her identity. Is she a friend or family member? Considering Chloe's relatively small witness list, it raises the question of whether Ruth Bracegirdle might be a family member. Going back to Chloe's statement in her lawsuit, she mentions, "During the first weekend of March, Warner went on a trip to Japan for a fashion show. When he returned, he brought with him numerous gifts for plaintiff, including expensive jewelry and a pink kimono that he expected plaintiff to wear at his apartment. He also gave plaintiff a key to his apartment. From this point on, Warner made clear to plaintiff that she was required to be with him quite often, unless he had band practice or another engagement, at which time he allowed her to go to the duplex she rented with her aunt. Though plaintiff did not give up her duplex, she acquiesced to Warner's demands and effectively moved in with him." In her lawsuit, Chloe mentions living with Manson while still renting a duplex with her aunt. It's reasonable to expect her aunt's testimony to confirm or refute this claim, but there's currently no way to know if this is the aunt. The mystery deepens considering a separate legal filing where Chloe's attorney opposes the testimony of her own witness, identified as her sibling. This document explicitly states the name and their relationship, which is how we know this request relates to her sibling. Although the arguments for opposing the testimony were sealed, this particular detail raises numerous significant questions. Why is Manson using Ruth's deposition in his defense? And why does Chloe no longer wish her sibling to testify? Could Ruth and the sibling have had conflicting testimonies? Once again, this adds to the list of intriguing aspects we may not have answers to in the near future, particularly because there are also pictures of apartment keys that Manson presents as an exhibit. But so does Chloe. For context, they both list the same picture of the same key. The difference is, in Manson's exhibit description, it details she was asked about this at her deposition, which means Chloe was using this as her evidence, and Manson was going to simultaneously use it to refute her claims, again, leading to more questions rather than answers. The fourth exhibit in Manson's list is Chloe Black's full deposition from September 7th, 2023. In this deposition, Chloe mentions a new allegation, specifically being locked in a soundproof room. Additionally, there's a brief mention in a filing from Manson's attorney, Howard King, that Chloe claims to be recovering new memories of alleged abuse by Manson. During the deposition, Chloe was likely questioned about the major claims in her lawsuit, including her claims she lived with Manson, her claims she had keys to his apartment, the alleged traumatizing groupie video, the two alleged sexual assaults, and the two emails she sent to Manson around times of two major claims. To recap, these emails were sent after two significant events in her lawsuit. One a month after her claims of being traumatized by the groupie video, and the other containing photos of her in lingerie, sent within 2 weeks of her allegations of rape and forced oral sex by Manson. This also connects to another intriguing aspect in Manson's exhibit list, where he includes text messages with Chloe spanning from February 27, 2011 to October 27, 2011, where in her exhibits list, she provides none. While Manson's exhibit list has a variety of text messages spanning from February 27, 2011 to October 27, 2011, consider what Chloe had to say in one example about Manson texting her, quote, "Warner became increasingly controlling of plaintiff. When he permitted plaintiff to leave or go to her own residence, Warner would text and call her incessantly, and he would chastise and/or punish her if she did not return quickly enough. If plaintiff did not respond to Warner's texts immediately, he would call her angrily, demanding to know where she was and who she was with. Warner would make such texts and calls at any time of day or night, and he expected plaintiff to respond or answer immediately. Which then leads to a reasonable question. If these texts showed exactly what she says, then why does she not show these texts? Additionally, there are photographs of Chloe at Manson's Born Villain screening on August 28, 2011, and August 29, 2011, where she was pictured with actor Billy Zane and John Hamm on both dates. Moreover, her deposition provides additional intriguing questions, since Chloe was likely questioned about the groupie video. It's essential to consider whether she was asked about her communications regarding groupie with individuals such as Evan Rachel Wood, Esme Bianco, Ashley Walters, and other accusers. A related aspect worth examining is found in Ilma Gore's deposition within Manson's lawsuit against her and Evan Rachel Wood. During the process of contacting women via social media, email, and more, one of the steps involved having calls or Zoom meetings with these alleged victims. There's a specific exhibit in Ilma's deposition that pertains to a Zoom call. Did Chloe participate in one of these calls, and if so, was groupie discussed? Did she provide any information to them about it? Chloe's lawsuit includes detailed information about groupie, such as its occurrence after a show at the Hollywood Bowl, Manson's residence near the Cahuenga Cross in the Hollywood Hills, and the involvement of an ex-girlfriend seen in one of his 90s music videos. She also mentioned that Manson's former manager, Tony, advised him to lock the tape in a safe and never show it to anyone, or he would be sent to prison. These are very precise details to recall, especially considering Chloe's previous claims of repressed memories. Furthermore, certain details mentioned in her lawsuit regarding groupie appear to be directly aligned with statements made by Manson during a previous interview on the show Dinner for Five. Specifically, this is part of the exchange between Manson, actor Andy Dick, and actress Daryl Hannah. Daryl asks Manson, "Did you get it distributed?" Manson replied, "No, because when I showed it to my manager, he said, 'Please hide the masters. If anyone sees this, you'll go to jail and your career will be over.'" Daryl then asked, quote, "What's it called?" Manson replied, "It was called groupie." However, this all seems to connect to Manson's lawsuit against Evan and Ilma, particularly regarding his allegations against the groupie video. As a reminder, Manson alleges in his lawsuit against Evan and Ilma that, quote, "Between 2019 and 2021, as part of her multi-pronged attack on Warner, Gore had multiple conversations with prospective accusers in which she claimed that a 1996 short film made by Warner called Groupie depicted child abuse and child pornography. During one such conversation in 2021, Gore said that the actress in Groupie was a minor at the time of the shoot and was dead, and that, if the video were to be seen, Warner would be indicted. Gore's statements about Warner and Groupie are demonstrably false. Gore knew they were false or acted with reckless disregard of their falsity." And also, the lawsuit says, quote, "Still, promulgating these and other falsehoods was part of Gore's scheme to orchestrate and amplify false accusations against Warner thereby bolstering Wood's claim that Warner had been her and others' abuser. This, in turn, would bring further attention to the Phoenix Act, the associated film project, and curry favor with Wood and potential and existing accusers against Warner. Indeed, Gore's defamatory allegations regarding Groupie have been repeated in at least one civil complaint filed against Warner, and consequently have reverberated through the press. This is entirely unsurprising, given that Gore discussed these false allegations with prospective accusers. Wood condoned and encouraged Gore to promulgate defamatory falsehoods about Warner in order to further their conspiracy. Consider that Chloe claimed in her lawsuit that she believed Manson had murdered the woman in the Groupie film. This connects various lawsuits, with Chloe explicitly naming Groupie, while other lawsuits involved being forced into watching a disturbing film. And Chloe aimed to present the film Groupie to the jury for this trial, but it was opposed in legal filings by Manson's attorney. Which is why Manson's attorneys were arguing that if she wanted to show the video, they had to allow the actress to then testify that it was acting. Furthermore, Manson's attorney, Howard King, mentioned that Manson provided some discovery in November 2021. This implies that Chloe received the Groupie video at some point during the discovery process. The question then arises, when did Chloe's attorneys receive this video, and did her attorneys share this video with law enforcement, possibly leading to the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department's raid on Manson's properties in late November 2021 and early December 2021? Because answers to some of the questions, including the ones he claimed his Fifth Amendment right to, were due around November 1st, 2021. Recent court documents outline what the Sheriff's Department seized, which included the Groupie video, Chloe's claim that she believed the woman in Groupie was deceased, along with Ilma Gore's allegations of child pornography and child abuse, raises more questions than answers, and further connects these intertwined lawsuits. Even Ashley Morgan Smithline, who recanted earlier this year, claimed she was forced to watch a video depicting child pornography. Is all of this related? Again, more questions that we likely will not have answers to for some time. But there are certainly more details that could certainly make this its own separate deep dive episode, something to look forward to in the near future. The fifth intriguing aspect of Manson's exhibit list is the stark contrast in the volume of evidence that would have been presented by him compared to Chloe Black. Manson primarily used Chloe's own medical records, a deposition by her own witness, her own communications, and more as part of his defense. In contrast, Chloe would not use her communications or her medical evidence to prove her own allegations. Which is odd. This disparity highlights Manson's possible greater level of preparedness for the trial in comparison to Chloe. These observations prompt the question of whether her intention was to proceed to trial at all, because it appeared she did not have the evidence to support her allegations, nor did she prepare depositions with her own witnesses for trial. At least by what is notably absent in her own witness list, to include a deposition from, say, Ashley Walters. And Chloe has to choose to come to the table and settle her own lawsuit. She could have gone to trial and told her alleged story for the public, the media, and the world to hear about. Of course, we will never know how this trial would have played out, but it's interesting to consider these speculations. Moving on, I want to take a brief look at Chloe's trial exhibit list. While some of her exhibits have been mentioned earlier in relation to Manson's, I'll highlight the noteworthy ones since her list is relatively small. Chloe had 19 exhibits in total, featuring several undated photographs, including 6 with both Manson and herself, and 4 solo pictures of Chloe, one of which includes an unidentified man and a tattoo pen. There's also an undated photograph of Chloe with an unidentified woman. Interestingly, Chloe included only 2 emails between her and Manson, suggesting maybe their emails or communications were limited. Earlier, I discussed Manson provided text messages spanning several months. I do not see any mentioned in her exhibits list. One email from March 1, 2011 contains a photograph with the subject line, "My fave." Another email from August 10, 2011 contains 2 photographs, and there's an email message with a single painting dated May 25, 2011. One of her exhibits is the Instagram post where she publicly made her allegations, titled "Instagram Post by Chloe Black Music," which once again confirms her identity. Additionally, there are 2 pictures. One is a photograph of a cat toy, and the other is a picture of keys. Really, this is the extent of the evidence she was providing for trial. Based on this, it's easy to speculate that even if this had gone to trial, she likely would not have won, Not everything goes to trial, even if it's a quick win for Manson. Most lawsuits settle before trial because they're simply cheaper, as well as just the emotional toll for everyone involved. It's why I truly believe these lawsuits will largely settle to pave the way for the lawsuit against Evan and Ilma, because this exposes everyone, in one trial, at one time. Now let's turn our attention to what would have been the witness list for trial. As a publicly available legal document provides details on the names, roles, and allocated speaking times for each side. Chloe had a total of 6 witnesses, consisting of 3 fact witnesses and 1 expert witness. Notably, both Chloe and Marilyn Manson are also listed as part of these 6 witnesses. Excluding them, the fact witnesses include Ruth Bracegirdle, Frankie Layton, and Ashley Walters. Ruth Bracegirdle is the witness I spoke about earlier, where Manson interestingly had her deposition as part of his evidence. Frankie Layton is the sibling that Chloe was trying to prevent from testifying. This development was intriguing, considering that when Chloe initially came forward with her allegations on social media, she posted comments purportedly from her sibling, supporting her claims. Ashley Walters, who is Manson's former personal assistant and has made public allegations against Manson, is mentioned 13 times in Chloe's lawsuit. It is expected that she would have testified to Chloe's claims made in her lawsuit, but because of the new allegation made about a soundproof room, this could have been one of many potential fact problems for Ashley Walters. More on that later. For an expert witness, Chloe lists Gilbert Kleiman. From publicly available records, this doctor is a child psychologist. I mentioned this earlier in this podcast episode because why would she need an expert in child psychiatry to testify for her? On the other hand, Manson's witness list comprised of a total of 9 individuals, including 6 fact witnesses and 3 experts. Notably, this list did not include Ashley Walters or Manson himself. Among the fact witnesses listed were Tony C. O'Law, who is Manson's former manager, and 2 former Manson band members, Jordy White and Chris Vrenna. Pola Weiss, the groupie actress, Lindsay, Manson's wife, and Ashley Morgan Smithline, who recanted her allegations against Manson earlier this year. From legal filings, we learned Tony was anticipated to provide testimony countering Chloe's allegations. He was expected to testify that there was no soundproof room with a lock in Manson's apartment, and he had regular, often daily interactions with Manson in his apartment back in 2011. Moreover, his testimony would have refuted her claim that she essentially lived with Manson and received a key to his apartment. Because during this time period, Manson's apartment also doubled as an office and recording studio. Similarly, Chris Vrenna would have provided firsthand knowledge that there was no soundproof room in Manson's apartment, that she did not move in with him, nor did she have a key to his apartment. As a former bandmate, he worked and recorded in Manson's apartment throughout 2011. In addition, there's a small note in the legal filing that says, quote, "Plaintiff wrongly states that Mr. Vrenna was in the groupie film. Jordy White, another former bandmate, would have provided similar testimony, confirming that he recorded and worked with Manson in his apartment in 2011. He would have also testified that the soundproof room did not exist, that Chloe did not live with Manson, and that she did not have keys to his apartment. Additionally, as someone who participated in Manson's short art horror film Groupie, he can refute Chloe's inaccurate claims about the film. Moreover, he would have testified that Manson's stage persona that is portrayed in the film is not the same as Brian Warner's persona. Pola Weiss, the groupie actress, would have testified that the groupie video had been staged, it was acting, and she was a willing participant in it. She would have also testified that she was not a young teenager, as Chloe asserted in her lawsuit, and that she had been 21 years old when she acted in the film, that she was paid to act in it, that she was not afraid or abused. And after the film was shot, she spent the rest of the evening hanging out with Manson. Lindsay, Manson's wife, was expected to testify that Manson's former apartment did not have a soundproof room, and would have testified that she visited the apartment often in 2011. She would have also testified that Chloe did not have a key to his apartment. As far as expert witnesses, Manson had 3 expert witnesses listed that would have testified in his defense. The first expert witness is a well-known leading expert on false memory and repressed memory, Dr. Elizabeth Loftus. Dr. Loftus is a professor of psychology and an expert researcher and well-known in the field of psychology, particularly in the study of repressed memories and how they can be altered or influenced. Her research has had a significant impact on the field of cognitive psychology, bringing attention to a controversial aspect of memory and psychology. Another expert witness, Dr. Simone Viljoen, is a professor and a licensed clinical and forensic psychologist. According to publicly available information, some of her specialties include forensic assessments, competency to stand trial evaluations, and insanity evaluation. While the legal filings do not detail what she would have testified to, is it possible that she evaluated Chloe's mental health records and assessed them forensically? This seems plausible. Last, another expert witness Manson listed is a Dr. Georgie M. Winters. According to publicly available records, this actually might be a typo for a doctor named Georgia M. Winters. Either way, she is an assistant professor of psychology and is a licensed clinical forensic psychologist. She is also the director of a research lab addressing sexual violence prevention. According to her website, Dr. Winters has extensive clinical training, conducting forensic psychological evaluations to inform a range of legal issues. Areas of expertise for trial include, but are not limited to sexual grooming, child sexual abuse, sexual assault and rape, victim disclosure, and online sexual offending. While the legal documents did not describe what she would have testified to, it is possible it may have related to Chloe's claims of grooming, sexual assault, and/or rape. This also leads to the same question. Is it possible she forensically evaluated Chloe's mental health records and therapy notes? In summary, both Chloe and Marilyn Manson had assembled their witness list for the trial, even though some of these witnesses were in dispute from testifying. Moreover, some of these witnesses would have testified that there is a difference between Marilyn Manson's stage persona versus Brian Warner's persona. Considering Ashley Walters was set to testify on behalf of Chloe, she would have had to confirm or deny Chloe's allegations. And it would not have looked good if there were four or more witnesses that would have refuted what one former fired personal assistant testified to, especially if everyone else contradicted her and Chloe's claims. Additionally, Ashley Morgan Smithline, who publicly recanted her previous allegations against Manson earlier this year, stated in a prior declaration that she had been approached in 2020 by either Ashley Walters or Ilma Gore for the documentary, and that they invited her to join a group meeting consisting of individuals claiming to have had relationships or experiences with Manson. This means likely Ashley Walters would have been asked questions pertaining to this. In this lawsuit, with a lot of interesting exhibits and expert witnesses in Manson's defense, Manson's legal team may have likely argued that these allegations are part of an orchestrated hoax for a jury to hear. If they ruled in his favor, it would not have looked good for any accuser. But it especially would not have looked good for Evan Rachel Wood or Ilma Gore as they prepare their own defense against Manson's allegations made in his lawsuit. The notice of settlement, filed almost 3 weeks ago, signifies the settlement date of September 26th. In an exclusive statement to Rolling Stone, who reported on this first, Chloe Black shared her comments on this settlement. Chloe says, quote, "I was fully prepared for trial and never in a million years thought I would ever settle, but over the past 2.5 years, I have silently endured threats, bullying, harassment, and various forms of intimidation that have intensified over the past few weeks. Marilyn Manson attended my deposition, and I was forced to answer 7 hours of aggressive questioning with him staring at me from across the table. I've been told that this almost never happens, as it's cruel, and that a main reason for it would be to intimidate and inflict emotional distress on a victim. I never cared about money and only ever wanted justice, but if we had gone to trial, I could have lost my right to anonymity and been victim blamed on a large and public scale. Most importantly, I could have risked losing the freedom to tell my story, and that is worth more than anything in the world. If any other victims are reading this, please know that you are loved and supported, even if it doesn't feel that way, and that in spite of everything I've been through, I don't for one second regret speaking up." One detail I do want to mention, because Rolling Stone does not detail this, is that it is perfectly acceptable and normal that the opposing party can be present for depositions. And even this mention of it being 7 hours long likely included breaks, a lunch, and more. Comments from people who are more familiar with what happens at these depositions say the same thing. It's an attorney's job to prepare their client for this reality. So either her attorneys did, and she's lying about it. Or they did not, or they just didn't expect Manson to be there. Which, again, is something Rolling Stone should have clarified as part of the normal course of litigation. Following these comments, Manson's attorney, Howard King, gave this statement to LA Times, quote, If this individual had actually wanted to share her story, she could have done so in front of a jury next week. Instead, as soon as the facts came out, showing that her case was meritless, she settled for pennies on the dollar. King, who called the settlement amount an insurance payment representing a fraction of her demands and far less than the cost to Brian of proceeding to trial. King said he was prepared to release the full transcript of Doe's deposition, with her permission, including provocative emails she allegedly sent to Manson after the alleged assaults, so that everyone else can know the truth as well. Doe's attorney, Adam B. Wolfe, defended his client's statement and rebuffed King's characterization of the settlement amount. One should view the comment quite skeptically, as Mr. Manson has an ethical obligation not to disclose information about the amount of the settlement, Wolf wrote in a statement to the Times. As for his attempts to smear Ms. Doe after settling with her, we have no interest in commenting further on Mr. Manson's behavior, he continued. Mr. Manson's history of misconduct speaks for itself. Considering these comments, which excludes avoiding answering that Chloe would allow her deposition from becoming public, I personally believe it's reasonable to surmise that this tells us all we need to know. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support this podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest updates on the Marilyn Manson lawsuits and allegations, you can follow me on social media as The Manson Cases. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.